reply from Prasad. That's the way to do it. Just hammered for four. He comes right back and uproots his off stump.
Hello, all you cricketing tragics out there, and welcome to another episode of the Uprooted Stumps podcast. I'm Arjun.
And I'm Gopal.
And we are your hosts, coming to you from London with guests from all over the world and talking about what's going on in cricket.
Kohli drives through the covers. It's into the fence like a tracer bullet.
That's how it's done.
Hey, everyone. Gopal and I are here, and we're going to look back at the second test match between India and England that's just completed, and we're going to look forward to this third test match, the pink ball test match, and try and get our predictions in. So let's jump right into the India-England test match, Gopal. What do we think about the selection?
So selections from India point of view was spot on for me, because Sundar had to go. Because I think it was almost like a thank you for helping us out in Australia kind of selection. And he did well with the bat again. But I don't think he deserved the place in the side based on his first class record and having given up like 18 months of no first class batting or bowling at all. So I don't think he'll feel too bad about it. But he has a chance to make a comeback later if he works on his bowling. So Akshar for Shahbaz was an easy selection, because easy from the point of view that you could see it coming from Kohli's press conference that he was not too pleased with Shahbaz's economy rate. And given Akshar came in with as an all-rounder with some batting prowess, it was easy to drop Sundar and get in our favorite man, Kuldeep.
Yeah, when we did our predictions after the first test, we predicted exactly this team. The only thing that we had a question mark on was Bumrah, whether Bumrah would be rested for Siraj, which happened. But otherwise, it was a fairly straightforward team, and I'm glad Kuldeep got to play.
I was very surprised with how accurate Sachin got it, right? Like he said,
our friend Sachin.
Our friend Sachin from the club. He said Bumrah is going to get dropped or rested, and Siraj will come in. And I was like, okay, it's a left field call, may happen, but no, there was not too much noise around it in the media around why he was dropped. Maybe England have normalized this rotation policy so much that even when star players get rested, it's not a problem anymore.
So let's talk about this rotation policy. England's rotation policy, so they've rested Anderson. And they brought in Stuart Broad. They rested or they moved out Joss Butler, and they brought in Ben Foulkes. Besides that, the other changes were kind of forced. One was Jofra Archer being injured, so Ollie Stone came in. And then Bess for Ali was more of a tactical decision as well. What is your overall thinking about this? Because here in England, I'm hearing such a negative vibes from the different fans about this rotation policy, and people are calling it England B.
Yeah, I also find it very, very silly that you change the entire look of a winning team. And to be fair, like, how much has Anderson really played? So he's only playing test matches. Right, and this is a four-match series, and then he's going to have rest after this because IPL is going to happen and everything. So the next test he plays is in New Zealand. So does he really need to be rested? It seems quite a stretch to say that, okay, we are protecting these bowlers by resting them. But because I'm sure Broad and Anderson, having played nothing else, they can keep going for four test matches. I mean, it's not a big problem. What do you think? Yeah.
I think this England B concept is... It's insulting in a way to India and Indian fans. It seems like an excuse. Two reasons. One is there is bound to be some advantage of rotation. So if Anderson is rested for the second game, he should come into the third game fully fit. And then the fact that he didn't play is coming to England's advantage. So then you can't say that England B was used. You've decided to do that because you think that you have enough resources to spread out. The second thing is, if it is England B, then isn't it India C? Like, where is Jadeja? Where is Umesh Yadav? Umesh Yadav would be the number one pick. Mohammad Shami would be one of the first picks as well. Where are they? Where is Hanuma Vihari? They're not there. Right? England is missing one or two of their main players. And they've chosen to get good players in. It's not like Ollie Stone is a terrible pick. Besides that, which are the people who would really walk into this team? Maybe Butler would walk into the team, but then we'll come to Ben Fox and, you know, he had a great game. Maybe Bairstow will walk into the team ahead of Dan Lawrence, but, you know, his average is, I think, something like 34 in tests. So it's not like there's a big difference that he would have made. So besides that, I don't know. I think it's unfair to use that term England B.
So if you're looking at England B as an excuse that fans are making for why they lost, then it's wrong. But I think from what I could gauge from the WhatsApp group, it seems like England B is like a term they're using to question the selection. Like they're using it to like slap the selectors and Ed Smith and saying, oh, they're trying to be too clever.
But you know who called it England B, right? It's not just people in our circle. Kevin Peterson called it England B. Kevin Peterson tweeted after the match ended. In Hindi, he tweeted, this guy. He says, Badhai ho India, which means congratulations, India. England B ko harane ke liye. Congratulations, India, for defeating England B. And that was seen as a jibe to Indian fans and India in general. And that England B was then trending on Twitter because of what he said. So I felt like that was uncalled for. There's another thing that is different about this match, which is the crowd. So the first Chennai match, there was no crowd. Second match, 50% crowd. And 50% crowd, we've seen the photographs. You know, 50% is a huge number. They were supposed to be socially distanced. One seat gap between each person. But obviously that did not happen. And everyone ended up being together. And that created this huge atmosphere. And Virat Kohli was a master of utilizing that crowd to his support. And, you know, he was kind of riling up that crowd. I think that made a huge difference. And in our previous episode, we had Shri talk about the impact of the crowd. And at that point, I wasn't very certain of the impact the crowd would have. And since then, I listened carefully to, you know, the crowd reactions way more than I would have because of what Shri said in the last episode. And I noticed that the things that he was saying about how the fielders around the boundary would rile up egg on these supporters, that really worked. And it creates this cauldron atmosphere where the opposition team is feeling a little bit isolated. So I think that worked a lot.
I think also Shri specifically mentioned that Virat is going to twirl his fingers and get the crowd going. And that's exactly what he did with his miming whistle podu. And then being disappointed with the amount of noise and then suddenly the crowd reacting to it. So it was really good to see that, actually.
Yeah, and even though this was the same ground in Chennai, the same stadium, there was a difference in the pitch. Obviously, the first match, the pitch was super flat, and we saw the advantage that it had or that it gave to England in their first innings. Whereas in the second match, the ball was turning from the first session itself. And you could see that it was dry. That means that there was dusty patches. And as soon as it landed, the ball would sometimes explode or the pitch would explode, creating a lot of turn. There's been so much said about the pitch, and it's almost gone to a territory of, you know, fighting between the English and Indian fans, talking about whether this is a good pitch or a bad pitch, how important the toss was. So I don't want to spend way too much time analyzing this, but we should still discuss this pretty quickly. So firstly, the question is it a bad pitch?
I think no. And I think going by your sentiment, that's exactly what Ashwin said in his press conference, saying, okay, like people are going say that it's a bad pitch or a good pitch. We as fans, we should just magnanimously point them that no, it's not a bad pitch, and then leave it at that. Because the more we try to defend that it's a good pitch or a bad pitch theory, the worse it becomes. I think Harsha Bogle said something that really resonates with me about defining a good pitch or a bad pitch. Lateral movement He is more about skill of the swing bowler or the spinner, etc., or lack thereof. So lateral movement is about a skill, whereas uneven bounce is more about the pitch. So it's like unpredictable. So I think uneven bounce, even if it's even though it's a leveler in terms of both teams can get it, it actually makes the pitch bad. But lateral movement, even though it actually accentuates the difference between the two teams, it's actually not a bad pitch.
Yeah, I agree. So I think there's two ways to look at it. One is what people are saying, especially the English fans are saying. And secondly, what is the Indian contingent saying and what are actually the neutrals saying? Now, the Indian contingent, which is like Harsha Bhogle, Akshar Patel spoke after the match, Ashwin spoke. Also, the neutrals spoke a lot. Australians, Shane Warne, all of them kind of feel that this is not a bad pitch. It may not be the best pitch, but it is not a bad pitch. And this goes back to what we spoke about briefly after the first match, which is what is the definition of a good pitch? According to me, the definition of a good pitch is one that offers something for the batsmen and the bowlers. That's point one. Number two is that it should be safe, which means that it shouldn't be like a Sabina Park bouncing off the square or rolling along the ground. And number three is that ideally it should allow for a match to last for 5 days, which is actually linked to the first point, right? That it should allow something for the batsmen and the bowlers, shouldn't be favoring the bowlers too much. So there's two real points in there. Now, there's one thing which is noticeably missing in that definition, which is that it doesn't say that it should assist spin bowlers or fast bowlers more than each other. Now, what everyone is saying is that because this is an Indian pitch, it is expected to turn. That's what our South African friends also are saying. It is expected to turn. And the fact that it is turning from day one does not mean it is a bad pitch. And that's what you're saying about Harsha Bhogle as well. In England, you get those green seamers. That doesn't mean it's a bad pitch. In fact, it is a bad pitch if those matches end in 2 days, which is what we saw a lot of 2-3 day matches, 4 day matches in England in the 2018 series. So those you would say are bad pitches. I think the pitch could have been better because it was difficult for this game to last 5 days. Although there's a lot to be said about England's batting also over here. India did have two very good innings from their batting perspective, 300 and 300 pretty much. So England had 130 and 160, which meant that the game got over in 4 days. Had they batted better, maybe it would have gone to 5 days. Or had they bowled better, maybe it would have gotten over in 3.5 days.
100% heavy.
Let's start with player performances. I specifically want to talk about the new guy who's come into the England team, which is Ben Foulkes.
You know, I saw his keeping on in the second innings, almost all the balls. I was up, I was watching everything. Like, he seemed like a magician. He was almost showing off how good a keeper he is, because it was wonderful to watch the leaves. It was wonderful to watch how he was grabbing them. It was like Rishabh Pant also had a fantastic game as a keeper, but it's you could see the effort in Rishabh Pant's keeping. Like, he was jumping to grab the bouncy ball and the turning ball, whereas Foulkes looked like a natural. It was effortless. It was really, really good to see. And that's when I first realized that, okay, there is something to this wicketkeeper theory. Otherwise, not seeing him keep, I would have missed something special in this game.
But not just the wicketkeeper theory, his batting as well. He was the highest scorer in the first innings, not out 42 runs. And it wasn't a streaky innings. He played very sensibly. He used his feet. He came down the track, which nobody really in the English team was doing. They were using the sweep to counter the spin, but they weren't really moving their feet as much. And, you know, Butler gets in because he's the superstar in a way. You know, he's won the World Cup. You know, it's difficult to drop someone like him. Yeah. Is he vice captain? Butler?
Yeah.
No cap.
He's captain in waiting for the ODI team.
Right. But then in my mind, he's like KL Rahul. KL Rahul is, he was vice captain of the Indian ODI team when Kohli wasn't there or when Rohit wasn't there. He's always vice captain. So he's pretty much third in line. And in the test team, he doesn't get in, which is fine. And I think that's personally where Butler is in my mind as well. I think if I were Ben Foulkes or anyone who supported the English cricket team, I would want Ben Foulkes to continue batting at seven for England.
But purely as a batsman, like if you take keeping out of the equation, you'd still pick him ahead of Ollie Pope and Bairstow.
I'm not considering Ollie Pope in this because I don't think Ollie Pope will keep for England in tests. Not yet. Bairstow also I don't think is going to keep right now when Butler is an option. So if the question is, I think therefore the question is Foulkes versus Butler as a keeper, unless both play somehow. But if it's Foulkes versus Butler as a keeper batsman position, then I will pick I'll pick Foulkes. Foulkes has a better career batting average in first class cricket and also in test matches, but test matches he's only played 12 innings. He averages 42, I think, Ben Foulkes in test matches, but he averages 39 in first class as well, which is more than what Butler averages. So yeah, I think Foulkes ahead.
So I'm trying to find a route. So let's say Foulkes plays as a keeper, then the three batsmen remaining, if Bairstow is available and Ollie Pope is available and Butler is available, then of the three, who do you pick then?
How many should I pick though?
You need at least two more, because assuming that none of them are going to play number three, you have Dan Lawrence at number three, or maybe if Bairstow plays number three, then Root plays number four. So the question is there room for Foulkes and Butler both to be in the test team?
I wouldn't do that, no. But we'll talk about that when we talk about selection for the third game. But for now, I don't see a way that they'll all play at the same time.
Makes sense.
Another English player who I was happy to see in this team making a comeback was Moeen Ali. His first test match in a couple of years, and probably his last test match as well in a couple of years, if not more, if not ever. He had a good game, Moeen Ali. At least, you know, he went out at the bang, scoring his 43 runs of 18 balls.
and got paid for it.
his IPL stock went up after that. He picked up four wickets in the second innings, and in the first innings as well, he picked up four wickets. So he picked up 4 and 48, but it wasn't the classiest of 4 and 4 wickets. But he bowled okay. You know, you can give him a good 6.5-7/10 with his bowling as well. So I think England will be upset to see him go, and we saw that when Ed Smith said at the end of the game to Moeen if he could stay back, which was a bit unfair on Moeen. It's also unfair on Dom Bess, because Dom Bess now knows that he's second choice.
I think they're being extremely, extremely unfair to Dom Bess, I think. He's a young bowler who's bowled his heart out. You can see him sweating. You can see him always like struggling and yet there. I find it unreasonable that they penalize him for taking ugly wickets, quote-unquote. And then when he still gets you some, I find the way they handle Dom Bess very, very unfair. Is the problem with in club cricket as well, right? When you handle spinners, it seems like the management does not know how to handle spinners. It's true more for wrist spinners who have lesser control, but spinners in general should be allowed to experiment. So again, this was a discussion where this guy Sachin was telling me that you don't protect bad balls of a spinner, but you also encourage them to bowl that bad ball. So we had a debate about whether we should have a sweeper cover or not. And it seems like you're asking him to be economical and not produce that magic wicket-taking ball that Moeen produced to get Virat Kohli, right? Like, unless you give them a little bit of protection that, okay, if you're going to twerk it, it is going to spin a lot, but you are occasionally going to drag it short. Like, I find the whole management of spinners unreasonable.
Yeah, speaking of management of spinners, we saw the return to the Indian cricket team of Kuldeep Yadav.
Oh, wow.
I felt the same. I was so happy to see him back in. I thought he's a genuine wicket taker. He's been troubling.
You know what you said? You remember what you said? I hope he's not lost it. And it didn't seem like he had lost it at all.
So he was bowling well, but his numbers didn't really back it up. A, because he didn't get too much of a bowl, which perhaps is because he wasn't bowling as well in the nets, maybe. Or, you know, they wanted that combination of one turning the ball in Ashwin and one turning the ball away from the right-hander in Patel. And the way Patel bowled, Akshar Patel bowled, getting five wickets in that last innings, I would have kind of wanted Kuldeep Yadav to be the one who gets that.
But Patel was magical. He was really magical in the way he bowled. I watched every ball that he bowled. And he was drifting it in, turning it away. And he in the post-match press conference also, he was saying how Ashwin and him were discussing this even from their Delhi Capitals time, that the speed at which you bowl is something that he learned from Ashwin. That you need to, if the pitch is doing a lot, then you can bowl it quicker. But you still need to be accurate. And if the pitch is not doing a lot, then you want people to be deceived in the air, etc. And he was bowling so well. He was almost like Jadeja, exact replacement for Jadeja, because he was bowling every ball in the same place.
Yeah, and exact replacement is, it's not that far off, actually. It's not that far-fetched, because he can bat well. He didn't do too much, I think, with the bat in this game. But he can bat well, and he can field well. He's 5 years younger than Jadeja. So he's 27, Akshar Patel. So maybe there is a way into that England, into that Indian team for him, for a backup for the next couple of years to Jadeja, learning from Jadeja and Ashwin, and then maybe even becoming a spearhead of the Indian attack.
Do you think age is more a factor in Test cricket, or is it more a factor in T20s?
I think it depends on whether you're a batsman or a bowler, and if you're a fast
bowler. Let's say for a bowler.
Again, I think it depends if you're a fast bowler or a spinner.
Let's say you're a spinner.
If you're a spinner, I think it doesn't matter as much in either. I think Piyush Chawla or Amit Mishra, if they still had it, you know, they could still play, or Harbhajan Singh could still play. Both T20s and test matches, and same with Imran Tahir can still play. I don't think, you know, bowling 4 overs versus bowling 15 overs will be the huge difference. It's probably the fact that you're fielding for 90 overs that's probably the only real difference in the two. So I think it's pretty similar for a spinner. I think the fast bowler is the one who would struggle, especially outside of India, when the fast bowlers have to bowl long spells.
But then if you're England, you're going to probably pick somebody and not bowl them at all, regardless of whether they have 500 wickets or 400 wickets in test matches. You're going to have a chill time, enjoy your day out in the sun.
Yeah, not pick them in the team at all. Yeah, exactly. So again, there's one more spinner we have to talk about. That's the man of the match, Ashwin.
Oh my god,
what a player, right?
Yeah. I rarely find myself agreeing with Sanjay Manjrekar, but he said something which made sense. Ashwin rarely has a bad day, which kind of resonated with me. This guy is not a Muralidharan or a Vaughan, that when they're on the roll, or even Kumble. When Kumble is on a roll, you know there's a wicket every over, or like there is something going to happen. Like with Ashwin, even when he's on a roll, it doesn't mean every ball something's happening, right? It may happen. But he's just like the definition of a scientist at work, as Harsha Bulke calls him. Like, he just knows the subtle variations. He just understands his own skill so well that he just keeps doing that and rewards come.
The fact that he scored a century a day after all of this talk about the pitch, saying that this pitch is made for Ashwin the bowler. Well, it was made for Ashwin the batsman, right? He scored 3 times in his career, he has scored a century and gotten a 5-4 in the same match. And there's only one person ahead of him, and that is Sir Ian Botham. So he's gone ahead of legends such as Jack Callis and Gary Sobers. And to be called an all-rounder, whereas Ashwin, he scored 5 centuries now for India in test match cricket, which is fantastic. But to be known as an all-rounder when in the last 2 or 3 years he was kind of dropping in his batting skills a little bit, I think is tremendous. 5 centuries is great. I think how many centuries does Rahane have? Rahane has 12 centuries in his entire career, and he's a main batsman for India, and Ashwin is 5. So nothing against Rahane, but this is special.
It's too good, too good. And I liked the way he came out to bat, like with a purpose. And you could see him actually outscore Virat for a long time. And only when Stuart Broad came in did he start giving some. He had two chances dropped of him. Before that, it was almost a chanceless innings. He knew where the sweep shot would land. He was going up in the air and he was happy going up in the air. So it was only after he reached some 70 or 80 did he give a couple of chances. That you could also say it's because tailenders were with him. So full points to Ashwin, the batsman.
And has Ashwin the bowler become a better bowler than he was a few years ago? What makes him special?
I think the England series, the one test match where India had the lead and India failed to capitalize because Ashwin bowled some 40 overs and not taking any wickets. Like he was actually, that's the last time I remember him bowling badly. Right. And I think that kind of catalyzed what he wants to do, needs to do. If Ashwin is not going to produce these magic balls, then Jadeja is a far more accurate kind of bowler, and he also gives you batting. So I think the fire in the belly that Jadeja caused is producing magic from Ashwin.
And do you think Ashwin should have been man of the match, or should it have been Rohit Sharma for his first innings dominance?
Oh, easily Ashwin, man. There's no doubt. Like in the second innings, when you're 5 down for nothing much, there's also a pressure situation. So the century kind of like the century for century, that cancels out, and plus you have 8 more wickets.
Rohit Sharma made 161 in the first innings. This was again at a time when the people around him falling for pretty much nothing. Shubman Gill and Virat Kohli went for 0. Virat Kohli doesn't even know how he got out, because he got out bold and had a peak of grace moment. Pujara made nothing. He made 21 runs. So 161 runs from Sharma, who after the first, I would say, 20 minutes, where he started off with some, not silly shots, but he started off with some shots that he didn't time perfectly, and they landed just short or just wide of the fielder. After that, he was fairly chanceless, I would say. Why was he so good? And can you also tell us about your thoughts on his use of the sweep shot?
Actually, you seem to be a more I love him, I hate him kind of Rohit Sharma fan. So I want to hear from you about what you thought about his innings and the chances that he gave in the beginning, and then the relatively chanceless innings that he played thereafter, and actually scoring a big daddy 100.
My love-hate relationship has been going on for the last 6 years. I think since 2014-15, I've always felt that he has this talent, but his test match record does not back it up outside of India. Inside India, he's Bradman-esque. I followed a lot of him in Bombay. You know, he's from Borivali, and there's a few friends of mine who've played with him or, you know, known of him before he came up in the ranks. They always thought that he's the guy who's going to make it. You know, Yuvraj Singh also back 15 years ago, was always talking about Rohit Sharma.
You know, there's a friend of mine who played in my university team. There is a school tournament or a under 15 tournament called Shatka Trophy. So the highest scorer in that tournament gets paid, gets the golden bat. And it's like almost like, yes, you are now going to play Mumbai under 15 or Mumbai under 17. Rohan Sarmandal was his name. So this guy was the highest scorer in that tournament, and he got the bat. But yet Rohit Sharma was picked ahead of him in that to the Mumbai team. And since then, he's like, Rohit Sharma is like, oh, everybody has this rose-tinted glasses view about Rohit Sharma because he looks good when he bats. So this looks good when he bats philosophy about Rohit Sharma has been going on for ages.
Yeah, I can imagine. And coming to his current test performances, you know, after the first test as well, I was hesitant about his success in England, and I still am hesitant about his success in England in the summer. India is going to play 5, if not a 6th game in England, most likely 6. And I don't know. I don't have faith. When he's batting, I worry. I totally feel that he has that in him to score a beautiful century, 150, you know, smooth. It'll look way better than Mayank Agarwal scoring it or KL Rahul. But, you know, in the first 30 minutes of the game, where he tries to just poke at it when he should be leaving it, that's what he did in the first game as well. He poked at Jofra Archer's ball outside the off stump. It was a good ball, but he still poked at it. Or he tries to play that pull shot for six, and they've got a fielder over there for it. He got out in Australia trying that as well. I don't know. I feel that's my love-hate relationship. So anyway, he played really well. I think the thing that I was really surprised was his sweep shots. I have not seen him use sweep shot as much, and he used it terrifically. He used all sorts of sweeps. He used the paddle sweep. He used the scoop sweep where he just tickles it behind leg stump. He used the traditional sweep, which is like the Joe Root style sweep, where he just pushes it just behind square towards a deep long leg or deep square leg. And he also used the sweep towards midwicket, which was using a lot of his bottom hand, a lot of power that he was using to get that sweep ahead of the pitch of the ball, so ahead of himself. Like he brought all his body weight forward, really stretching to the pitch of the ball to prevent it from getting that bounce and getting the top edge, and slogging it along the ground in a way. So slog is the wrong word to use, but he hit it from the middle of the back like a fatak, you know, smacked it to midwicket. So I think, yeah, fantastic innings from Rohit Sharma. In India, there's no question. He has to be batting at the top of the order.
So you're also going to pick batsmen for India versus overseas?
Of course, you must, right? Rahane, you would pick for overseas without fail. In India, there are questions. Rohit Sharma wonders why there are questions, but they are valid questions to be made about Rahane.
Rahane is a whole topic onto his own.
Yeah.
So I don't think he makes it to... There's still the reflected glory of that Australia series, but there's a lot of question marks on him.
Yeah, there are. 12 months ago, I was in Bombay. I was watching it in Bandra. There was a Ranji Trophy match going on, and it was Bombay versus Karnataka. And it had some good players in it. Karun Nair, Padikkal was just making, you know, his foray into this format. And on our side, Bombay side, Rahane was there. And Rahane looked out of place in a way. He looked like he had that stature, but he wasn't really fluid as a batsman. And this is still Rahane when he's at his prime in his batting career. And if you're struggling to play in Bandra against Karnataka's spinners, then when Nathan Lyon comes at you, you'll struggle in India. Okay. Before we move on to the next match, there's one last thing that I think we have to talk about, and that was the umpiring.
Oh no. Oh man, you know, our clubmate Shiv put it quite eloquently, saying we really, really need to consider neutral umpires because there were shocker decisions, and he was embarrassed that it was an Indian umpiring helping an Indian cause. He said, would have felt okay had another nationality umpire made the same decisions benefiting India. Don't know what others think.
Yeah, no, well said, Shiv. I think it's unfortunate. You can't have neutral umpires during the COVID period. For the last couple of decades, we've been having neutral umpires, and that has been a strategy that has worked really well for ICC. And this incident over here may back that up. I don't think there was any malice. Firstly, I think it was just incompetence, primarily by the third umpire, Anil Chaudhary. So the on-field umpiring was not as bad as people make it out. So the two on-field umpires, Virinder Sharma and Nitin Menon, were good. There weren't many howlers on field, except one which we'll get to. But Nitin Menon, firstly, is India's elite panel of umpire representatives. And he was good. He was the one who Virat Kohli yelled at towards the end of the match. Virinder Sharma was this comparatively way more meek fellow who Joe Root questioned about the Rahane catch. And Virinder Sharma didn't really have an answer. But Anil Chaudhary, he made a mistake. That Rahane flick off the pad and onto the glove, which...
it's terrible.
Yeah, that was terrible. Mark Butcher was very right to call it out, and he was praised by a lot for calling it out. He was also ridiculed by a lot of rose-tinted glass fans. But he did the right thing, Mark Butcher, and Rahane was lucky over there. Rohit stumping, Rohit Sharma stumping. You could say it was 50-50. In my mind, it was maybe 70% out. But the point was that he had a trigger happy moment where he decided way too quickly. He didn't really look at the various angles. And finally, the Rohit Sharma well left. Do you remember that? Rohit Sharma. Yeah, what do you think about that?
Clearly out. For me, it's not about the umpire's call, but it's about how do you adjudicate on a 50-50 decision. So on a 50-50 decision, you take whatever was the previous call and you don't overturn it. So that's why a soft signal is to ascertain what the previous call was for a 50-50 decision. Mm-hmm. But what is a 50-50 decision when it comes to whether somebody was playing a shot or not? Clearly, the replays will show you the intent of the batsman much more obviously than real time. So when you have that benefit, why would you still go to the on-field umpire saying whether he was playing a shot or not? I find that very contrary to the whole philosophy of a 50-50 decision.
Yeah, hard to argue. Think? Hard to argue against that. This was the one way. This was Virender Sharma having a huge blunder on field. I mean, there was clearly no shot. Even Gavaskar on commentary said there was clearly no shot. And then there was no shot. So Rohit Sharma was lucky over there. I think Joe Root was unlucky in a way that he had to adhere to these rules of DRS, wherein he's not allowed to ask the umpire why it was not out.
So again, I hate to say it, but one more place that I that I have to agree with Sanjay Manjrekar. So Sanjay said the purpose of the DRS is to get the right decision, right? And if you have to get the right decision, how does it matter if the on-field umpire tells the captain, like, why waste a review or why force the captain to guess what the umpire's decision was? Your purpose is to get the right decision.
I think it's a bit more nuanced than that. I of course, he's right. Your purpose is to get the right decision. But there are times when there is subjectivity that comes into play. And with subjectivity, you may see something differently on field versus on camera. Unless it is absolutely clear-cut subjectivity, like the Rohit Sharma one, you would say is, you know, 90 people out of 100 would say he was not playing a shot, but 10 people would still say that he was playing a shot. Unless it's 100%, it's very difficult to...
No, but what is the harm in the on-field umpire within the 30 seconds that you're allowed to review? If the fielding captain asks him, why did you give that not out? Was it pitching outside leg? Or did he play a shot? What is wrong if the on-field umpire gives the captain that his thoughts?
Because the on-field umpire may have made a mistake or a blunder. And if the on-field umpire gives the captain his thoughts, then there is no chance that the on-field umpire's decision can be overturned.
Why so?
Because Joe Root would have taken a decision of reviewing or not based on what the on-field umpire says.
So let's talk about the offering a shot question, right? If the rules are as they stand right now, that the third umpire cannot overrule whether you are playing a shot or not, that is completely from the on-field umpire's point of view only, mm-hmm. right? Even if Joe Root disagrees with the fact that it was playing a shot or not, he wouldn't have gone for the review because he knows that the on-field umpire has made an error. Right. So let's take the inconsistency of the rule out of the question and talk about some other decision where the fielding captain is actually questioning the on-field umpire's decision. Right. So whether it pitches outside leg or whether there was an inside edge or not. So let's say there's a Mitchell Starc bowling and it pitches somewhere and it looks like bat and pad are close to each other and the umpire rules it not out. If Tim Payne goes and asks him, why have you given a not out? Was it pitching outside leg or do you think there's an inside edge? And the on-field umpire says, oh, I thought it was pitching outside leg. And then Mitchell Starc can say, no, it was definitely pitching in line. Let's go for it. So what's wrong with that? Because it's going to be fair for both teams.
Yeah. Yeah, Manjrekar is... Okay, Gopal is right. I don't want to... He'll suddenly get two fans on his YouTube channel. And but... You know, I'm thinking why maybe I don't understand this. Why is there even a rule that you have to not play a shot for that outside the off stump line to not be considered?
Yeah, good point. You know, I think Ian Chappell or somebody suggested that LBW rules keep changing all the time. The last change was in the 1980s, where they say it has to pitch in line and also hit in line. So they changed it to no, it can pitch outside the line of off stump, but it has to be hitting in line. So there's a rule saying, okay, how do you equalize this batsman versus bowler theory? Like, it doesn't need to be hitting in line, right? All it needs to do is go and hit the stumps. And I, for one, don't mind that change
actually. On the off stump and the leg, outside the off stump and outside the leg stump.
So outside the leg stump, I'm a little bit more on the batsman side, because it can get quite negative. There are far fewer shots to be played on the leg side than there are on the offside. So on that front, I'm a bit more on the batsman side, but I don't mind changing it actually. As long as it's going to crash into the stumps, it should be given out.
Yeah, definitely one to think about. Let's look forward, Gopal, to the third test match. Third test match begins Wednesday the 24th. We're moving to a different ground. This is going to be played in Ahmedabad. 110,000 seater capacity. We've seen some YouTube videos around or some WhatsApp forwards about the state-of-the-art facilities over here. You know, the 55 rooms and this Olympic-sized swimming pool and theaters and all these kind of facilities, conference rooms, absolutely fantastic new stadium. I went to the old stadium over here in, I think it was 2001 or 2002, to watch a one-day match between India and Pakistan. Sachin Tendulkar scored a century, but then Pakistan with Inzamamul Haq actually chased that down. 330 or something they chased down, which 20 years ago was a gigantic score. And at that time, the stadium was terrible. Absolutely terrible. There was no parking. It was difficult to get access to food and water. It was too congested. So I'm sure that the fans that do get to go in there, 50% capacity, are going to absolutely love it. And they're lucky to be able to witness a test match in that stadium.
So the last game I saw there was in 2012. Was the India-Pakistan T20.
In Ahmedabad.
So I saw it live. And Yuvraj Singh scored some 70 runs of 30 balls or something. And India won that. And my experience was not very good getting into the ground, because it was a dust bowl outside.
Correct. So exactly.
Yeah, you have to walk some 2 kilometers from where the last place that the auto was willing to drop you.
Yeah, no, Gujarati brothers and sisters are not used to walking 2 kilometers, that's for sure, without having some theplas in their pocket at least.
Exactly, man. It was quite like, and it was a day-night game, right? It started at some 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. or something. No, it started later, some 5 p.m. or something. And it was so hot, sweaty, and like only the Yuvraj sixes kind of made up for it. and the thing is, it was almost getting to the wire, and I was kind of hoping that India would wrap it up quickly,
just to get out of there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you don't want that.
No.
You don't want that from a fan's point of view.
Yeah. This is also a day-night game. This third one. And it's going to be a pink ball game. Pink ball means there's that extra layer of lacquer. We expect it to move around a little bit more than the red ball would. It is something that we've always spoken about for the last few weeks as being that the one match wherein England can perhaps do something special. We don't know what the pitch is going to play like. The ball is obviously expected to do more, but we don't know if the pitch is going to be a seamer or if the pitch is going to be another turner. There are some pictures moving around or going around in social media, but it's still a few days away from the test match, so we don't know. What can we expect from this third test match in terms of the ball and the pitch?
My source for this is Ashwin's channel. The one thing that everything else is kind of covered. I think you have a lot more experience in because you've delved into the depths of this. But one thing that I would say is the square, there being 12 pitches there, the square has 12 or 14 pitches.
11.
So Ashwin said having 12 or 14 pitches, it's more a question of faster outfield, because the larger the square, the more percentage of the ground is actually going to be flat and really trimmed grass. So it's going to be much faster outfield. Anything that you can like time perfectly is going to go all the way. I'm predicting high scorer.
High scorer, okay. Interesting. I would not have predicted high scorer. I think it'll be a turner. I'm predicting a turner, which is just a guess. And I think England are going to struggle again with India's bowling, because I think India's swing bowlers will also come into play, and I think India's spinners will also come into play. It's a good time to talk about selections for India for the next match. Now, my first thought is that Kuldeep Yadav will not play this match for two reasons. One is because the dew in these day-nighters is going to make it difficult for him to grip the ball. Not to say that a wrist spinner should not play any game where there's any dew, but it will be a little bit difficult for him. And anyway, he was kind of borderline based on his performance in the second game, or his utilization in the second game. You know, if you've got Akshar and Ashwin bowling all those overs, I think India will play with three fast bowlers to utilize the pink ball. We've heard that Umesh Yadav is fit. Umesh Yadav, I think, will replace Kuldeep Yadav, and otherwise we'll go with the same team. And Bumrah will come in place of Siraj.
Mm. Actually, I didn't think of Umesh being fit. So if Umesh is fit, yes, he comes in. I think so too. I can't disagree with that selection, actually.
Yeah.
Do you think they might give Siraj another go before Umesh, or do you think Umesh plays?
If Umesh is fit, he'll walk in. No question. In fact, I would pick Umesh ahead of Ishan Sharma also. Umesh Yadav is devastating in India. He has to play.
And we just saw his performances, right? Like against South Africa, he picked up some 12 wickets in that series at an average of 12.
Yeah.
He's like a crazy good proponent with the new ball as well as the old ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he's playing a video game easy level, right? For him, it's so easy. So yeah, so those are the two changes that you and I think are going to happen in the Indian team.
Yeah.
England team. Firstly, let's talk about their forced changes. Sam Curran, who I thought would have been a good pick for them, now is not able to play. He's out of the entire series. The rumors or the story behind it is a bit strange, but they're saying that there is no direct flight from England to Ahmedabad, and so he can't get in, which I find again strange, because why would he not go to Bombay and then take a car from Bombay? But anyway,
you know the first class Shatabdi from Bombay to you can book the entire coupe or a bogey for less than a first class business class ticket.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a strange one.
I used to do Ahmedabad, Bombay quite a lot. And the Shatabdi takes you there in 5 hours. And you also have these really quick non-stop Duranto as well, which takes you there in 4 hours. And you can travel in luxury.
And what about a car? Isn't a car also like 9 hours, 10 hours?
So I biked and it was like some 9 hours. Yeah, some 6 hours if you're going non-stop. But I mean, it's silly to quote that as a reason.
Yeah.
I think that's why Modi is coming up with the bullet to facilitate Sam Curran.
Yeah. And then, but then Sam Curran needs to play the IPL to get the money to pay for those tickets. And we'll talk about the IPL in our next episode. But so Sam Curran is out. Bairstow is in. Would England make any changes?
Yeah, Bairstow comes in, walks in, like kick out somebody else, get Bairstow.
Dan Lawrence.
Yeah.
However,
somebody has to make room for this man. I like Bairstow because I get the feeling that he's not so well liked by English fans. But our club mate, Tom, who who we had on earlier, he actually mentioned that no, he's not actually disliked. He's actually pretty liked within the England setup, but he just comes across as abrasive when it comes to the media. I think the guy got the short end of the stick because he's not as well spoken as Butler is, but he's every bit as talented in the limited overs setup. And I hope he makes a name for himself in general, but not in India. I hope he remains not out at 20 while England get bowled out or something.
So Bairstow comes in for Dan Lawrence, which means Ben Foulkes keeps his spot, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That means that your top seven is now confirmed. One change. Jack Leach will play. This much also we know.
Yeah.
So there are three questions then. One is, who's going to replace Moeen Ali?
There's only one guy who can replace him.
I think there are... Okay, so let's take all three questions. So question... There's Stuart Broad, Ollie Stone and Moeen Ali. All these three played the last game. Of these, who will still play the next game?
I think Broad and Anderson both will play.
So then Moeen Ali need not be replaced by Dom Best. He could also be replaced by Jofra Archer. Because Ben Stokes is not going to be bowling 30 overs in the game.
Did they say Jofra is available?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, man. That's... Because Joe Root is a good enough part-timer. I think, yeah, Jack Leach, Joe Root can take care of the spin options. And you have Jofra, Anderson and Broad. I think Joe Root missed a trick by not bowling Broad at all in the second innings. And even in the first innings. Because Broad showed his class with his leg cutters, right? He was getting it to grip and move away. There's something to that experience. So I would say that Broad, Anderson, Archer, Leach, along with Joe Root are my bowling options.
Yeah, I would say so. Michael Vaughan had suggested that Rory Burns should be dropped.
Oh.
And Zach Crawley should be playing.
That's very unfair on Rory Burns, no?
I don't think it's necessary. I don't think Zach Crawley is going to be doing... much anyway. I don't rate Zach Crawley too highly compared to Rory Burns. I think they're similar. Vaughan's point is that Rory Burns struggles against Ashwin, and that's it. But pretty much everyone struggles against Ashwin.
Exactly.
Right? So if these are the teams, what do you think is going to happen? Who's going to win and who's going to play well?
Actually, let me ask you something else before that. Do you think the toss is going to be a deciding factor?
I hope not. I hope it's not like the first match where the toss was. I hope it's like the second match where the beautiful pitch meant that the toss was not a deciding factor. I don't know. I think it depends on the pitch. Right? We don't know how the pitch is going to play at all. So anything I say would be a guess.
I think toss is not going to be a big factor. Because they have laid in a new service, they'll want it to hold on more often, right? And because India have the fast bowling goods, they'd say, okay, let's not produce a rank turner or something. So the toss is going to be less of a factor. It's going to be who handles that day one twilight session the best.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, right? Ravi Shastri could also go up in the morning and say, chal bhai, me ko turn karai nahi kai. That's it.
So, yeah.
Who knows?
So,
who knows?
So, regardless of who wins the toss, I think it's going to be so. Unless one more of English batsmen outside of Joe Root turns up, it's going to be a one-sided affair again. If nobody else outside of Root plays, then it's going to be like a cakewalk for India.
Yeah, I agree, and I'll be more certain in my answer than you are. I won't give these ifs and buts. I'll say India are going to win by a very, very comfortable margin of 200 runs. Virat Kohli is going to score close to a century, if not a century. And Cheteshwar Pujara is also going to be a star batsman in this game. And from the bowling side of things, Jasprit Bumrah is going to have a very good game in his home state.
Yeah. Pujara's home state as well.
Akshar Patel's home state as well.
Yeah. It's going to be Thepla time.
Thepla time. Thank you for listening. And I think if you join us for our next episode, we're going to try and have our next episode out soon, dear listeners. And in that, we're going to talk about the IPL auction.
Nice. That's all for today, folks. Wherever you are in the world, have a great day, night, or commute, and stay safe. Remember, cricket is the winner.